Good morning. It would be an understatement to say that we watch very little sports in my home. I happen to know that Iowa and Nebraska played this weekend only because I was at my father's home this weekend, but neither Taman nor I are big fans of any particular sports team. So one of the only exposures that our girls have to sports is when we go to Taman's family in Ohio. We're usually there the week after Christmas, so there's a good bit of football going on. And when we're there, the girls watch football with Taman's father, their pawpaw. The moment that I realized how sports sheltered the girls are was when we were in a restaurant one time and there was a big screen showing a football game, and three-year-old Annalie pointed to it and said, "Look, it's Pawpaw's favorite movie." She didn't even know it was a sport. So. Now she knows it's not a movie, and she knows that Pawpaw's favorite team is the Cleveland Browns. Now, I may not know much about football, but I do know that the Cleveland Browns are not one of the winningest teams in NFL history. But their fans are some of the most loyal and long-suffering, and Pawpaw is a true fan. So a few years ago, when Amelie was trying to think of a gift for Christmas for Pawpaw, I suggested she write him a story. So she did, and this is the story. She wrote and illustrated the story, "The Browns Won." Here's how it went. Once upon a time, there was a football team named the Browns. The Browns played and they won, and the Browns got a reward, and played and won again. The Browns got another reward. The end. Well, you should have heard Pawpaw laugh. "Thank you, Annalie," he said. "You wrote me a fairy tale." And Annalie was very confused by this because there were no princesses in this story. So Pawpaw had to explain that the only way he could believe a story of his beloved team winning again and again was if it was a fairy tale. But the story did make him happy. This tale of something so joyful finally coming to pass. A joy particular to him because she knew that he loved that team. And he will, as he always has, continue to cheer for the Browns, win or lose, and hope for the fairy tale to come true one of these years. We write the stories we want to hear. And sometimes we even hear the stories we want to hear, whether they're written or not. We write the endings our loved ones long for. We write the flesh onto the bones of our dreams and intentions. Today, as we begin Advent, the month of preparation for Christmas, we're gathered together to hear a tale that we've heard many times before. And we long not for a new story or a new ending, but to feel the magic we once felt when this story was new, perhaps. For the Christmas story is probably one of the stories that many of us have known longer than any other story, and that has been retold with more regularity every year than maybe any other story in our lives. This year, I find myself longing more than ever to be able to hear that story as I did as a child, to have the magic resprinkled over it, and in fact, to have the magic of Advent and Christmas be, once again, what I remember it felt like as a child. And yet this year, perhaps more than any other, it's hard not to feel like that's an entirely escapist longing, wanting to make Christmas great again, when we all know that the way Christmas is depicted in America is unattainable to most, and at too great a cost for those who do achieve it many times. But this year, there's a beautiful thread through the Advent lectionary. It's these passages in Isaiah that are, quite frankly, magical. Swords beaten into plowshares in today's story. In the weeks to come, lions lying down beside lambs, deserts breaking forth into bloom, a young woman miraculously with child, and all of these led by a child. The name Isaiah is a stand-in for a prophetic tradition that is both stubbornly justice-oriented and yet so poetic in the magical realities it calls its readers toward. Today's passage is about beating swords into plowshares, a passage that Anabaptists and Mennonites have often turned to when trying to describe our often baffling to others choice of nonviolence and pacifism. If there are biblical passages that we're stubbornly literal about, it's passages such as these. We believe that these crazy calls to peace and justice are actually descriptions of God's intentions for human lives and our participation in that reality. That we are not only not called to make or support war, but rather we are called to transform our hearts and weapons and lives into instruments and advocates for right relationship and justice and love. Artists have taken up this challenge also quite literally. Esther Augsburger is a Mennonite artist who was able to gain access to 3,000 guns that were turned in through a gun buyback program in D.C. Quite a few years ago. And she made a 4-ton plowshare out of them that is still up in D.C. A Mexican artist, Pedro Reyes, collected 1,527 guns from the citizens of Culiacan, Mexico, and used the weapons for a project called Palas por Pistolas, in which Reyes had the guns melted down and recast into 1,527 shovel heads to be used to plant 1,527 trees. Anabaptist theologian Ron Sider made an impassioned plea at a 1980s Mennonite World Conference in Europe for historic peace churches to embody these stories of peace that they professed. Quoting him, "Unless we are ready to start to die by the thousands in dramatic, vigorous new exploits for peace and justice, we should sadly confess that we never really meant what we said, and we dare never whisper another word about pacifism to our sisters and brothers in those desperate lands filled with injustice. Unless we are ready to die developing new nonviolent attempts to reduce conflict, we should confess that we never really meant that the cross was an alternative to the sword." That challenge was taken very seriously, and out of that came a year of meetings where those who wanted to ponder that gathered, and it resulted in the creation of Christian Peacemaker Teams, an organization which continues and trains and places nonviolent activists in areas of conflict around the world as witnesses. So my invitation to you this Advent and Christmas season, our invitation as CMCL's Worship Committee, is for you to immerse yourself in one or more of the stories that have changed or shaped you. To make your Advent discipline the opening of a space in your heart, your mind, your calendar, to reconnect with a book or a story that has inspired you or pushed you. If that means dusting off a childhood favorite book, or checking out or buying yourself a copy of something that's still on your parents' bookshelf, do it. But don't do it to disconnect or escape. Read it to remind yourself of who that story has been preparing you to be. For me, the groundwork for my bravest decisions and deeds was, one, the values I was exposed to at home and church, through the life choices and postures and presence of my family. But that groundwork was also the stories that introduced me to the kinds of characters that I couldn't have met or dreamed of in my day-to-day life. These stories prepared me to make many of the risks that I've taken, to travel, to desire diversity, to desire transformation of myself or the world. And third, the people I've taken the opportunity to be in relationship with have changed me and changed my eyes and dreams for the world. And the stories I immersed myself in prepared me for the possibility of difference, for the potential of the blessing of difference. I am who I am My family is who my family is, in great part because of the stories I immersed myself in. These stories, whatever the stories are for you, have been planted in you for a reason. Whenever you read and reread stories, you are testing out possibilities for yourself, for the world, trying on courage, trying on compassion, trying on circumstances completely foreign to your world, and also circumstances and relationships just like yours. You may think, as I did, that this Advent is the last Advent to let yourself immerse yourself in magic and stories. But I think maybe it's actually for that very reason that it is exactly the season and the year to immerse ourselves in the stories that have made us who we are, the stories that have prepared us for the challenges that we are now called to rise to. Whether your stories are Star Wars or Star Trek, Harry Potter or The Hunger Games, Nancy Drew or Holden Caulfield or The Lord of the Rings, stories of the early Anabaptists or desert monastics, Francis of Assisi or Hildegard of Bingen, the Gospels of Jesus Christ, or even the stories that led up to Christmas. This is the time to immerse in the stories that brought you here. Not to escape, but to remember and prepare. To share a favorite book with your children, or your spouse, or your best friend. We'll be referring to stories that have shaped some of us in our sermons this Advent, and inviting conversations with one another about what stories are important to you as well. Clarissa Pinkola Estes is one of those authors who has changed me. And I was grateful to have this particular letter to a young activist during troubled times that she published a number of years ago, brought to my attention again recently by Mary Lou Weaver Hauser. In it, Pinkola Estes writes, "The fact is, we were made for these times. Yes, for years we have been learning, practicing, been in training for and just waiting to meet on this exact plane of engagement. When a great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe. There can be no doubt. But that is not what great ships are built for. And who knows what fairy tales we might accidentally or purposefully live into reality. Maybe even the Browns will win one of these years. The world needs us. Our souls are waiting for the chance to live into the challenges around and ahead, the ones that were brought to us by the stories that we love." Amen. Thank you.